This is episode number 412 with CrossFit founder Greg Glassman.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Welcome everyone to episode number 412 of the School of Greatness podcast. Super pumped to have you here. And about 5 years ago, maybe it was a little more than 5 years ago, might have been 6 years ago, I did my first CrossFit workout with my buddy Graham Holmberg, who ended up winning the CrossFit Games. That's why I got into it a number of years ago. I played football with him in college. He was actually one of the first episodes I had on of the School of Greatness podcast, I believe in the first five episodes, for being the fittest man in the world. And CrossFit really transformed my life, my habits, my body for a number of years. And it helped me develop an incredible community. There were some incredible things that happened to me because of CrossFit. Now, a couple of years ago, I actually ended up transitioning out of CrossFit workouts, per se, going to the CrossFit boxes and doing the actual workouts that they have there, because I was doing more USA handball stuff and I needed some different strength training. I needed different plyometric training. I was playing a lot more basketball. I was just doing other things, long distance running as well, to build up my endurance. And I decided to move away from it a little bit. Now, I still go back from time to time and I'll do a workout here and there, but I love the idea of CrossFit. I do my own high intensity interval training workouts, which are very similar to the CrossFit style as well. So I love the style. I love the community. I love what they stand for. And I wanted to bring on the founder, Greg Glassman, to really talk to him about fitness in general and how he started this, how he built a movement, how he cultivated such incredible raving fans from all over the world. We talk about his business model. We talk about if Greg's worried about CrossFit dying out or not. We talk about how masculinity in the gym has been affected by having men and women work out together, because it's co-ed, so everyone works out together. We talked about why having less customers rather than more can actually be a good thing. The marketing power behind having raving fans who get results. Why it's so important to do functional movement workouts despite the risk of injury. We talk about, you know, a lot of things are, so many CrossFitters get injured and they're constantly going to the chiropractor or getting massage therapy or getting physical therapy because they get injured so much. So I asked him, you know, are you afraid of that when you hear these stories about all these injuries that people have? And he had a pretty good response for me about the injuries that happen in CrossFit and why everyone should be doing these type of functional movements despite the risk of injury. We also talked about why CrossFit is so effective at helping women have great body image and confidence. I was fascinated with his response when I said, what's the thing you're most proud of all the things that CrossFit has done? What's the number one thing? And he talked about something in terms of women. I won't spoil the surprise for you, but I thought it was extremely inspiring to hear. So we talked about a lot of things, guys, and I think you're going to love this, especially if you're anyone that likes to work out or likes to stay fit, or anyone that has a business that evolves around building raving fans, or anyone that wants to learn about how to build an incredible brand that's taken over the world. Really, I mean, this is a huge brand that's taken over the world. You guys are in for a treat because we cover it all in this episode. Make sure to share this out with your friends, lewishowes.com/412. We got the full video interview on the show notes. We got a bunch of images there, links where you can learn more about how to connect with Greg and learn more about CrossFit and everything else. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel, YouTube/LewisHowes, where you can watch the full video and all the interviews that we've done with the incredible leaders in the world on the School of Greatness podcast. But without further ado, guys, this is going to be a very powerful one. Again, make sure to share it with your friends. Click the share button right now on your podcast app if you're listening so your friends can listen along. Without further ado, let me introduce to you the one, the only Greg Glassman.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
With Capella University's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
Welcome everyone back to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got the CEO and founder of CrossFit in the house, Greg Glassman. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Lewis.
Thank you so much for coming on.
And thanks for having me.
Want to share a story about how I got into CrossFit and heard about it for the first time.
All right.
I used to play professional football, arena football. And as I was getting out of the sport, I got injured. I broke my wrist, and I was trying to figure out how to get back in shape. I gained about 30 pounds, and my college football teammate, Graham Holmberg, was a trainer at the time in Columbus, Ohio, and started working me out and doing these different type of workouts that I'd never really done before. And then he told me one day, I'm going to go do this competition thing. I did it last year and I got like top 20 in the country for this like obscure thing. And I'm going to go back like next couple weeks and my goal is to get top 5. And now a month or two goes by and I see Graham afterwards and I'm like, you know, dude, what happened with that competition thing that I had no clue what it was? And he goes, oh, I actually won. And I was like, what? What do you mean you won? And that's when I really started to learn about CrossFit was diving in to see like how my buddy like did with this event. And yeah. Such a cool experience to really dive in, and ended up being, you know, a huge CrossFit fan and going to the games to watch multiple times.
Yeah.
And it's been an amazing journey to see what you've built and to see how many human beings have benefited from your brain, you know, your creation. So congrats on everything.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, I'll take credit for the genesis, you know, the spark, but this is a largely been a spontaneously developing community.
Yes,
the CrossFit Journal, which was fundamentally a newsletter that I soloed for the first 2-3 years, you know, wrote every article. It was like starting a magazine and writing every article, which I wouldn't recommend anyone ever do. but that was a client's idea. And the first affiliate, the second CrossFit gym, the first affiliate, was the idea of Dave Werner that, you know, and Rob Wolf that called and asked to do it. And our best ideas have largely been other people's ideas, demanded by the community.
Sure, sure.
And so staff and I are more the stewards of a natural resource than we are the architects of a. Mm. You know, nobody could have foreseen this and designed it and built it. Not me nor anyone else.
So would you say you're really good at listening to what the audience wants and you build something around that need?
I don't know how good I am. I define a good idea as something that has an inevitable nature to it. you know, and what usually lacks is a champion and energy resources, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's some things that people say, you should, you know, the games, you should have masters and kids. Of course we should. But, you know, every idea has a price tag.
Yeah.
And it's maybe not just dollars. It could be energy or, you know, and in fact, I'd put it in this order. The hard things to get the champion. Second hardest would be the time.
Champion the person leading the...
That's right. Yeah, a guy who's goes to bed worried about it, wakes up worried about it.
Because you don't have the time to do 30 new things.
I'm championing all I can.
Exactly.
And crushed by it.
Yeah.
And we're that way about three or four layers of really talented people up to their... You know, got one nostril above the waterline.
Yeah.
And so and then people tell us, you know what you should do? And sometimes it's just financial. Like the year the guy says... It's crazy. We don't fly all the athletes out to the games first class. You know, I mean, it's the games is not a profitable property.
Right.
You know, it's a.
Is it break even or is it make some?
I think it did this year. I think we broke even.
Yeah.
But I thought we did last year and it cost us $4 million.
Oh, you know? My gosh.
Yeah.
Even with the sponsors and all the ticket sales and the TV rights.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah. And know this, the thing's driven by thousands of volunteers. I mean,
right.
This is really, we owe a lot of people a lot. But it's not a business in any sense that I would recognize as a business.
I'm doing my first big event this week coming up, and we're in the hole, and I'm just like, what am I doing of this year of planning and all these volunteers?
Yeah.
So it's a very small scale compared to what you created, but hey, I understand on a small level.
It starts, and then it takes off. And, sometimes the problems begin when the success starts.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
What are you going to do with this thing? But it's all been wonderful. I don't have complaints.
Sure.
But I do find it... delightful when I see people imitating the competition space
and
visions of getting rich.
Or what was it, The Grid or something?
Yeah.
Any of these startups. Is that even around anymore?
Yeah, something's going on.
Sure.
Something's going on. Of all the ways to get rich, starting a brand new sport is like would really be low on my list of
exactly.
Smart ways to make money.
Now, how many... I guess athletes are doing CrossFit around the world right now. Can you calculate, or is there a way?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's come up with a handful of really kind of cool partners. You know, like we've had a long-term kind of interesting exploratory relationship with Microsoft. They wanted to know. Our friends at YouTube and Google have been interested, and we were always interested ourselves too. And of course, media always asks, how many CrossFitters are there? Mm-hmm. The problem starts in defining a CrossFitter.
Yeah.
So I got a guy that's doing CrossFit-like workouts but says he doesn't do CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? And it's, well, and then you hear it. And it's, you know, it reminds me of the gym where you see the rings and the rower and the kettlebells and the barbells and the ropes and pull-up bars. And, like, we don't do CrossFit. And I was like, oh, really?
What do you
show me what you do with this stuff. I'd like to see it. Because if it didn't look like what we did, you'd have to, like, do maybe the same thing every day or – you'd have a schedule. Mondays we do this, Tuesdays that. Or maybe the pace is so slow that there's not a cardiorespiratory.
It's not timed or yeah.
Yeah, but they just don't want to call it CrossFit, so it's not
CrossFit.
They
don't want to pay
the fee. That's fine, yeah, sure.
They don't want to pay the fee.
And I'm totally cool with that. You know, I never thought this was protectable, you know? It's like a blueberry muffin recipe, not a piece of software.
Yeah, you can't.
Unfortunately.
You can't patent doing kettlebell swings,
it.
Right?
Nope. And maybe that's...
But
that's,
you can protect the brand.
We can protect the brand, yeah.
And the namings of workouts, I'm assuming, or something like that,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's cool. That's very cool. Well, I guess how many registered members of gyms maybe or...
Well, you know,
know that.
But we talk about those in the wild. That's the CrossFitters that aren't in the boxes.
Right.
And what is that number? But let me just answer your question
sure.
And tell you that we also do not know. I don't believe if God had the answer or willing to give it to me, I would be willing to sit here and bet a large amount of money that it's not less than 2 million.
Mm.
I would also bet with this same, you know, omniscient entity, the deity that's going to tell us how many there are, that it isn't over 4. And
cool.
What's interesting, I mentioned our partners they've come to the same numbers. But by some methods, just full of flaws.
Hmm.
But I don't know. Maybe my method's not right. Here's what
sure.
We did. I took a stab at the financial ecosystem, and you know I have a pretty good sense of how big we are, how big Rogue is, and you know all the players. And so you make a list of 30 businesses that are at the heart of this movement, you know, mm-hmm. the movers and shakers, and make an estimate of their size, and then you have to figure out how many people are spending that much money.
Yeah.
And at $2 million, they're spending a boatload of money, and at $4 million, significantly less.
Sure.
And so it gets to the point where I just don't think that people are spending that much money to create this much business. Mm-hmm. So less than two. But what's fascinating is that actually this is all very different than the kind of Kim Kardashian social media mindset. The market value of my audience is actually more valuable with the smaller number, because they're spending more.
Hmm.
And so if you could have a chance of dealing with 4 million people spending 4 billion or 2 million spending 4, you'd take the 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why? Less headache or something?
No, it's a super affluent demographic. Anyone in business is proud to get the rich people.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, accuse me of any kind of a rigorous economic mindset, but I'm kind of a trickle-down guy. You know, I believe that you want to create a revolution, get the rich people on board, you know, and it comes up in a cultural revolution. I get them involved and it'll filter down.
Yeah.
You're not going to get cars for poor people before rich people can have them. I'm not going to get people in homes with no means if you can't do it for people with means.
Yeah.
And what happens is that as that upper niche is satisfied, the natural tendency is to start moving into other markets. Mm-hmm. This is why, I mean, we just sat with Google talking about their help and helping us reach a billion Indians.
Wow.
You know, and that's what's cool is that it's going to cost me a lot of money to do that and a lot of effort, but we're doing it because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a sense that there's a market there for us. You know, I'll give you another example that's where we're going today, the 44th Congressional District here in California. This includes Compton and Watts.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hard hit area. There's a lot of underserved people, a lot of black people, a lot of brown people. There are 800,000 residents, and I only got 12 gyms there.
Mm.
And it bothers me. And the bother isn't – like, we got 14,000 gyms. I'm not looking at my black brothers and brown sisters and saying I'm not getting any of their money. It's not that. It's just that we have an elegant solution, maybe an optimal solution to the world's most vexing problem. That's chronic disease.
Mm.
And that community is hit harder than any other. It's the least healthy place in California. And I only got 12 gyms.
Mm.
Now, globally, we've got one, nationally, we have a gym for every 50,000 people. Okay.
In the U.S.
Yeah, in the U.S. And I've got a globally, that figure is 100,000. It's 100,000 folks to each box.
That's amazing.
I'm under the global standards in that district, you know.
Sure, sure.
And I'd like to reach them, but that's kind of a luxury, given that we're here in the States, where the average gym membership, we understand from really reliable sources, is 5x the national gym average.
Wow.
And so who's going to the boxes? Rich people.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
a lot of them don't.
I mean, I trained the brick here. Brick.
Yes.
CrossFit.
Yeah.
It's $200-$250 bucks a month. You know,
yeah.
It's not cheap.
Yeah. You go to Gold's for $35 a month.
Exactly.
You know.
So these are high-end gyms.
They're high-end gyms.
Yeah.
But I do have people of modest means that spend disproportionate of their income because they're that committed. So we got
exactly.
a lot of fanaticism,
yes,
too.
Exactly.
But I would imagine a lot of gyms are doing what I did, and that I had several billionaire clients that made it easy for me to say no to anyone that just touched me. You know, I've never, and it's like I can say this now because I used to live in fear of it getting out. I used to tell people, I'm going to put you on a scholarship, and if you tell anyone, you're going to lose it.
Right.
Tell one soul. You know what? No one ever did.
Yeah.
But you want someone to keep
to
a secret?
Yeah.
Put a paycheck on it.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly.
Not pay them, but take from them if they tell. And no one ever shared. But I'll bet a quarter of the people in my gym were not paying.
Hmm.
And maybe another chunk were their boss was paying.
Right.
You know, the billionaire that was taking care of them.
Sure.
And I was really grateful for the support of the wealthy. I had a friend and client, Sonia Khan, loaned me $50,000 to expand my gym. Mm. And I tried to pay it back when she says, no, you pay that back when you're rich. And I tried a couple years ago again. She says, you're not rich yet. I don't think she's ever going to let me pay
that
back.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
And what was I able to do with that? Everything. Work with kids and athletes and people in the community that, people that I would identify out in the street had a profound need. Come into my box. No, yeah. They don't have two dimes they can rub together. It's okay. Sure. I got you, you know? Yeah. And I've got that same attitude on the global level now. So I'm interested in India. I'm interested in Brazil and,
Yeah, I was just down there in Rio for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of CrossFit fanatics down there too. I mean, it's starting to blow up there.
It's a great market for us.
Yeah.
It's a great market.
So when was the first time you said, okay, this is CrossFit. This is a thing. This is the gym. Was it a moment? Was it a over time type of thing?
Yeah, I knew in my as a teenager that what was going on in the commercial gym facility was ridiculous. But that's because I was a gymnast, and the lateral raises and the curls and the leg extension and the reading the paper on the bike.
It's not athletic movements.
No. And so many athletes, as you know, don't like going to the gym because the dry land training, the gym part, it was not why you liked football. And that's not what I liked about gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Gymnastics didn't have that problem. There wasn't a training, dry land training effort outside of the sport itself.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
But people don't appreciate, I think, in the public that the gymnastics routine is a max heart rate event. That is extremely demanding in the cardiorespiratory sense, but you can't show it. You can't pant. You can't open your mouth wide.
You got to be able to smile. You got to
look them right in the face and salute and walk off. And then, but inside, you're
dying.
And when the season comes along, it's not as bad, but early in the season, it's devastating. It's Fran-like. And that was the impetus for developing that routine. I was trying to elicit the cardiorespiratory demands of a gymnastics routine without doing the movements. This is in my own garage, where a parallel bar routine or a ring routine is an impossibility for a 16-year-old kid.
Sure, sure.
And I nailed it. I had one of those Voigt pull-up bars that you twisted into the doorway.
Yeah.
We'd figured out if you took the rubber caps off and just kept opening it, you could drive it into the jam and actually get something safe.
Wow.
The people I know that fractured their skulls, hurt their necks, or broke their arms swinging on these bars, trying to have a high bar at home, right?
It's crazy.
Your doorway. Yeah. We used to do dismounts off those things.
Wow.
And every once in a while, I wanted to just come right off.
Oh, my gosh.
But I had a Voigt pull-up bar, and I had the Sears Ted Williams $19.95 110-pound weight set. And I just that very first day when it came out of the box, I was like, let's do 21 pull-ups and 21 of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then 15 and 15, 9 and 9, and so that it feels extra shitty, which is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Let's use the clock and just do it as fast as I can.
How old were you then?
16.
Yeah.
And, man, it worked. I threw up.
Yeah.
Threw up. Went across the street, got my buddy, and brought him over, and he threw up.
Mm.
And we're like, that's it, because that's what happens. Early in the season, you're developing tricks. So you know things you want to be able to do in a routine. And as the season approaches, now I got to stitch them all together. And what a completely different thing that is, to stitch them together than to do them in solo, to do them one after another in transition at max heart rate as opposed to coming up fresh, doing it, and getting off.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different world.
Right.
And you couldn't be dialed into that process and buy into something like there are exercises that are cardio and others that aren't. Like, I mean, if your heart rate is high, it's cardio, isn't it?
Sure.
You know, and so in the fitness world, it was bike, run, swim were the three cardios, and then everything else was strength training. And I'm like, yeah, but you do these thrusters with 95 pounds in these pull-ups, and you're going to get a whole lot stronger.
Yeah.
And there's cardio.
Yeah, exactly.
And what the exercise community's response to notions like that was that blended adaptation was an impossibility. Well, they had it wrong. The experts were dead wrong.
Mm.
The segmented training develops a segmented capacity. So if you work strength Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you work cardio on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, if I get my hands on you, I can set up a little circuit of a cardio stimulus for which you have low regard and a strength stimulus for which you have low regard and ask for 3 to 5 rounds of this, and you'll find that you're not strong enough and you don't have enough wind.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's almost as if you had done no strength training and had never had any kind of cardio stimulus.
Right.
The blended demands out of the blended stimulus is a unique beast.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's why? I mean, you've created people call it a cult or a tribe or whatever you want to call it. Do you think that these movements or the type of workouts that people are going through is what's created that, or do you think it's more of the culture, or is it more of the people? Is it more of the brand?
I don't think we can separate them, but I will say the brand symbolizes the net effect and was. You know, the charm and allure of the brand didn't draw people in.
Didn't draw people in.
No, and I don't think it does still, really.
Right.
What draws people in is the young lady or the young man or that grandma or grandpa that's gotten results and won't shut up about CrossFit.
Right.
And that's where the marketing happens. And those people drag people in. They bring them by the arm. They bring them by the ear. You know, they beg them. They're relentless in their pursuit of the next customer.
Mm.
And there's a lot of magic there.
It's almost like a gym doesn't have to do any marketing. Just get 10 people in there and it'll build on its own.
You know, we've regularly had to define some terms. It often happens when a term that everyone uses, you have to ask, do we all mean something different when we say it? And some things like that, fitness. Everyone's got a different mindset, and we all use it. Marketing was one of those things. But for me, marketing is any effort that is designed to improve the bottom line, mm-hmm. effective or not, but that's the hope. It's going to improve the bottom line. And it isn't a direct tinkering of the product or service. So you're not improving the product or service. You found another way to get people in the door. I'm not really impressed with that, but there is a level at which it happens, and it's essential, and it is that testimony of the end user.
Yes.
That person is marketing. They're not improving the product or service, but they're sure the hell out there. Now, in advertising, it'd be that way. Putting hot pink flyers under the windshield wipers at the cars at the malls, Groupon, all those things are marketing efforts. A lot of advertising is of that kind of thing. My advice would be to engage in none of that and anything like that. And for that's just me. That's my bias. Mm-hmm. And if you got any energy, resources, time, money, you know, talents, whatever, throw that back into improving your product or service. Get back to that relationship with the person coming through the door. Do such a good job with them that they go home and become one of those annoying people that won't shut them up about CrossFit.
Yeah.
And I think that's happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a few gyms lose it all to Groupon. Just, you know, they get a whole bunch of people that chase out the people paying full price. Yeah. They don't stick around and you're not making any money. But it's actually been the death of a couple of boxes.
Sure,
I would never do anything like that.
Sure.
And so I never had to do any of that. But, you know, where was I? I was 100% in the presence with the client, you know, whether it was 1, 5, or 10 of them, they were everything to me and nothing else mattered. And they took care of me. I didn't have to ever ask anyone to come into the gym.
Right.
Ever.
Right. They would spread the word.
They were bringing people.
If you were going to give them your full attention and energy during that hour session, they were going to go tell people afterwards.
Of course.
I just had the best workout of my life. You should come in. Look at the transformation. I feel amazing.
And, Lewis, so I talk to orthodontists and lawyers and accountants, and same with them. Same thing. They're not, no one advertised. You know, and there's always that Jacobian Myers kind of thing, you know, that's a little off the beat, you know, the dentist with billboards on every corner. And I think we all, a lot of us would be wise to be suspicious of that.
Sure.
I'm not.
Absolutely.
I have a problem with a lawyer who's got a commercial on every channel three times a day.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think that's the lawyer I'd be looking for necessarily.
Right. Yeah.
But the consummate professional has great relationships with the people they serve, and they're the source of the new people.
Yeah, exactly. Great testimonials as well.
Yeah.
If someone was looking to build a movement, whether it be in the fitness world or any world, any industry, what would you say are the key ingredients that they would need? Based on what you've done, I guess to replicate it, you know, at CrossFit in their industry.
Some of the answer might come in the what I see business as today. You know, my definition of business, and we got some pretty good traction with this at Harvard Business School and two appearances. And
it
was really appealing to the students, and so that really appealed to me too. Because I think I'm not sure. If the definition is anything other than my own bias, and then to find that kids at the Harvard MBA program really liked it, it's like, okay, maybe it is more than just, you know, my take on things. But I believe that business is the art and science of creating uniquely attractive opportunities for other people. And anyone that can iteratively, sustainably over, you know, 5 years or more, create an opportunity of any sort, whether it's a product or service, that is uniquely attractive, and what the evidence of that is that they buy it, they avail themselves of it.
Right.
But if you can provide a uniquely attractive opportunity for other people, you're going to have a successful organization or a successful business. And for me, a business is an organization, and importantly so. Money is to a business like jet fuel is to an airline. The goal of the airline is to get people from A to B safely, comfortably, right? And cost effectively, right? So for them and you. And if you're successful, to the extent you're successful, you're going to find that you're going to be burning more gas.
Right.
But for anyone to look and say, well, the goal here is to burn gas, you're confusing the dependent variable for the independent variable. And it doesn't work at all. And so all those people that think that money's about making business about making money, That's not the kind of business I'm interested in. And it may be maybe that kind of money is a different kind of organization. And it might somewhat be kind of an East Coast, West Coast thing. And I say that because I talk about business not being about making money, and people point some Goldman Sachs asshole out, or a whole bunch of them, in or out of the current administration and the past one. But that's not what's going on in Silicon Valley.
Yeah,
not really. And I can say that because I've had some super successful, you know, household name clients from the Silicon Valley, and to think that they got where they were because they were trying to get rich would be a profound misunderstanding.
Right. What were they trying to do?
The case of one, you know, and it's not that it's more noble than making money, but I got a buddy that if he can write code that works better than yours, he's smarter and better than you. And he just like that gets him off.
Right.
Well, you find success for that in San Jose and it's going to rain money.
Sure.
But it isn't about the money. It really isn't about the money, and because he'd do it for free, and he did and
it's
does
the craft. Yeah,
yeah, he can't help but do it.
Yeah,
if you took all his stuff away, two ways away, and locked him in a cell somewhere, he'd do that still. He'd still be writing, mm-hmm. you know, writing code. It's just he's one of those guys.
Right, right.
And that's kind of refreshing, really. It was for me. Mm-hmm. It was for me. What it meant is because, you know, I do this thing where I make an X and I show you are here, right. And then I got a dollar sign up here, and over here I have an E for excellence. And I say from here, people just, I want money. And well, you know, the universe doesn't care if you want money. Mm. Nobody cares that you want money. And markets are somewhat unknowable, and you go to chase the money and you miss the mark. And a lot of people end up behind bars, lost, broke, just trying to get rich. But if you pursue excellence, it's like a beacon. It's a lighthouse. You know, that's, you can see it. There's easy agreement and easy recognition of something outstanding. I don't know anything about orthodontic practices other than I had an orthodontist as a kid. Well, I got a buddy in Prescott, Arizona that has an orthodontic practice, and you go in there and it's visually amazing, mm-hmm. right? He's got, you know, 15 chairs with this view of the mountains,
wow.
and a pretty girl at each one,
right.
doing the work, and music's going, and it's well appointed, and it's a factory, you know.
Sure.
And he's standing there with his arms folded, and a big smile on his face, and it's just really cool. And the spirit in there is neat. And I go, holy cow, Doc, this is amazing. You know, I mean, he's doing orthodontia brilliantly.
Yeah.
I've seen in hair salons and restaurants. And the same thing, you go to a place and, you know, it's dirty, and you could just
right.
you'll know right away.
Feel the energy, yeah.
Yeah. And so the excellence shines bright, and it's obvious to everyone. It's so non-elusive, and you can every day work towards that E, towards that excellence, and you know that you're making steps, progress towards it. You can metric it. You feel it. You know when you're making it better. And what do you do tomorrow? I'm going to make it better. And how about the next day? I'm going to make it even better.
Exactly.
And you keep looking for things to make it better. And there's nothing like that on the money. So here's what happens. Those that will stay committed and really want the E, not the cash, they get there. Now here's what markets do. The markets move the money to the excellence, and almost always by a path that you wouldn't have figured out. And so another big part of the Silicon Valley story is the guy trying to get from here to there. And along the way, the target shifts a little, and it's excellent, but not that excellent, but this one.
Uh-huh.
And then here comes money from a different angle. But the
right.
people that have repurposed startups with large number of employees and just abandoned the technology, pick a new one quick, because you got to do something, right? We got,
yes.
you know, I a buddy of mine had a technology that he thought was the sure thing in a deal with Sprint, and turned out that they had been given the business to throw off from the other cell phone people the fact that they knew this technology was dead. Mm. And they just made the investment to, and anyways, so my buddy was kind of a pawn in a game of misleading AT&T and
right.
Verizon.
Right.
And so he had to come up with something, because what they wanted to do can't be done. And
sure,
they thought
sure.
it could. And the people that hired him to do it knew it couldn't be done too. And so they had to come up with something brand new overnight and did. and just to save everyone's jobs in the business. Wow. And but it's cool.
Wow. So, do you feel like you've made any big mistakes that you wish you could take back over the years in either building the brand or how things have run with the business? Or
it's got some smart-ass answers. I've been so disappointed by the behavior out of the weightlifting community sometimes that I wish I hadn't salvaged their dying sport. But that's I'm being flippant there.
Sure.
Now,
is there any regrets you've had in building the brand or the way you've run the games or boxes or anything?
If I was starting over, I would devalue the kipping pull-up and let it occur naturally. And those that, you know, the people that can't do strict pull-ups trying to kip is wrong. Mm. You know, the kip comes ineluctable. You go from 20 pull-ups to 40 pull-ups to 60 pull-ups, you're going to kip. You're going to learn.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a time under tension thing. There's you can show me a videotape of 5 of 5 pull-ups, 5 of 10, 5 of 20, or 5 of 100, and I'll know which it is. And if it's 5 of 100, that first 5, they're really fast.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And if it's 5 for 5, that's slow. Mm-hmm. And the kip comes naturally as a whole body movement out of that whole thing. And it's not a gymnastics move because it's not taught in gymnastics. That's not the kip. It's how gymnasts train pull-ups. And gymnasts need to have 100 pull-ups. And you're not going to get 100 pull-ups unless you can kip. Mm. But it's not used in anything. You know, it's an artifact of training.
Who created the kipping pull-up? Or
nobody. It's what happens when you keep adding pull-ups.
Got you.
They have to go faster and faster and faster. Yeah. Now the butterfly kip a little different. That was someone got a little clever there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's just one example.
Do you feel like you've structured the business in the way that you wanted to, or if you could look back and you, how many boxes do you have now? Or
14,000 something.
14,000. Yeah. And how is it? Does it continue to grow? Or have you seen a decline?
Still growing. There's some markets leveling off and others exploding. China's huge. Brazil's huge. You know, in the D.C. where we have the greatest density in the United States, it's tapered. Mm-hmm. Some fall off. Others just keep growing bigger.
Yeah,
you know, the best of them will continue to expand, continue to grow. It seems.
Mm-hmm. There's people talking about. I think with any new gym or any new fitness thing that it's a fad, or at some point it'll have its time, or at some point it'll be whatever. Do you have that fear with CrossFit that
none
10, 20, 30 none. Years, like it's going to start to taper? Or
here's what threatens us in that respect. The community is driven by the wonders of the entrepreneur and capitalism and the free market, individually owned and operated. That's a miracle. That's a pillar. Mm-hmm. The other piece is that the stimulus of constantly varied high-intensity functional movement leveraged against a diet of meat and vegetables, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, no sugar, is a really, really good match for the needs of the species and a billion years of evolution. Mm-hmm. There's things that we're doing that are at the heart of all mammalian species. So, you know, go back a billion years.
Sure, sure.
And I'll just give you one of those would be respect for the insulin-glucagon axis. The first proto-shrew had a pancreas, and so do we.
Right.
The abuse of that pancreas is a modern thing, and we can blame the CDC and the NIH for that, amongst others. And it, down at our level, at the grunt level, the NSCA and the ACSM, still promoting deadly diets, by the way.
Yeah.
And so CrossFit is the fad that brought a stimulus back to the shrew a billion years ago. It's that kind of fad.
Yeah.
Now, the non-CrossFit stuff was the fad. And I knew that.
What do you mean?
Lateral raises and curls. We're going to do cardio distinct from strength training. We're going to be on machines with pins. Mm-hmm. You can deadlift if you want to be a big, ugly fat power lifter, and you run if you want to have cardio. Mm. But nobody should ever do both, and certainly not in the same workout ever.
Right.
And I knew that was horse shit.
Yeah.
Just obvious crap. And you couldn't be an athlete and not know that. Mm-hmm. Not know that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. You know, and imagine the notion of nobody needs to be strong at high heart rate. Like, really? Yeah, yeah.
Right,
you don't have to be, you don't have to have a big imagination to see what's wrong with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LEWIS.
The challenge is, you know, I know I've heard some interviews where people ask you this question about injuries. And as a competitor myself, it's really hard to taper back and hold back in the gym.
Yeah.
It's hard to not compete against my own time, not compete against everyone else at the same time.
Yeah.
And if I don't have the self-awareness of how my body's feeling, you know, I've tweaked my back many times. I've gotten little injuries here and there from CrossFit.
Yep.
And you know, I'm responsible for it because I'm the one who pushes the boundaries.
Share something with you. Yeah. You can do everything absolutely perfect. You're still going to get hurt.
Yeah.
I can tell you this too. You're going to be much more injured by driving the workout injury to zero. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is now comes the specter of chronic disease.
Yeah.
Look, a couple of million people are going to die this year from chronic disease. And what is the figure? I think it's 2.8 million. Might be making that up. It's a lot.
Sure.
I do know this, that 70% of the population will die from chronic disease. Mm. It has the two-headed hydra of a cause in sedentarism, holding still, and mm-hmm. malnutrition.
Yeah.
The crappy diet. And the worst of that would be the eating way too much of everything. But in every case, it involves too much carbohydrate, specifically high glycemic carbohydrate, specifically sugar. And that lifestyle is the deadliest thing on the planet. It takes 70% of lives, and we're exporting it now so that this number is holding true. Even in places that are ravaged by infectious disease, they're rapidly approaching a 70% rate on chronic disease. Wow. And so, you know, the number of people that die from chronic disease is twice the number that die from all other causes combined. And that's what happens when you watch TV and eat the way the Center for Disease Control wants you to eat.
Right.
And so as soon as you get off the couch, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
And it is, because you know what? I'm going to tell you that sitting there watching TV there's a much less chance of acute injury, like say ACL tear,
right.
Break a wrist. I don't care. Any of these sprains and strains, you know, bruises, bumps, even, you know, things that might require surgical repair. As soon as you get up off the couch, those numbers insert themselves. Mm. So you say, hey, I'm going to go to the gym. And so you get in your car. Well, the risk just got compounded. you still have the risk of being sedentary.
Yeah.
But now you're out in public. Ride your bike to the gym, the risks are even greater. Hmm. Just look in this beautiful city here of L.A. I was doing the stats once. I pulled down some LADPD reports of car versus bicycle. It's horrifying. Every few minutes, someone gets whacked on a bike to where an ambulance is needed. Every couple of minutes, every day in the city. And so that's some really dangerous shit, right?
Right.
And then once you get into the gym, all those risks go up. But what is in free fall now is the risk of chronic disease. And so we trade the sprains and strains to avoid the heart attacks, the strokes, the cancers,
right,
the diabetes. And so someone says, I got a buddy that got hurt doing CrossFit. Isn't it dangerous?
It's dangerous sitting on your couch all day.
Yeah, 2 million buddies died not doing CrossFit.
Right, right.
And chronic disease it fundamentally is a lack of CrossFit in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't like
functional movement.
You don't like right.
Moving.
Functional movement. You need to be able to pick things up off the ground, get your ass out of the chair. Those aren't exercises. Nobody invented the deadlift. Nobody invented the clean. Nobody invented the pull-up. Whoever says, "Hey, check this out. Can you believe this? Look, check that out. I made that up." No, you didn't, dude. Everyone's been standing up for a long time.
Right.
You're full of shit. But someone says they invented someone invented the lateral raise. Because there's someone that was holding something doing this. The guy says, "What the hell are you doing?" He goes, "It's an exercise." The functional movements, it's obvious what you're doing, the value.
Yes.
The hyenas are chasing you, jump in a tree. You didn't invent the pull up.
You pull up and
you're getting away, and throwing a rock. No one invented that. It's been there since time immemorial. It's built in, baked into who and what we are.
Yeah.
And the first exercise physiologist, I can't remember his name, when you look him up when I'm talking about, he's a guy, a Brit that observed that the ticket takers on the double-decker buses had a fraction of the heart attack rate that the drivers did. And they're making the same pay, and you'd get the job, and they just assign you to one or the other. But one of them was dying in large numbers, and the other wasn't. And in his 99th year, this genius observed that this is the first time in history where people have to deliberately exercise to find health. The subject is the fad. CrossFit's a fad, just in the way that you're the human genome is a fad, and it's as stable as that genome is, which is pretty damn stable. And so people would say to me, "You still like the zone diet?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do." And they go, "Wow, it's been a long time." And balance of the insulin glucagon axes, adequate essential fatty acid intake. I mean, these things go back a ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would the zone diet have worked on people in pre-Columbian time? Of course it would.
Sure.
Of course it would.
Sure.
Sears and Glassman and a bunch of others, we've designed for our perception of the physiological need. That was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't to make money. It wasn't to sell a book. It wasn't to, we were addressing a riddle, a scientific question.
Mm-hmm.
And something like that is very, very much not likely to be a fad. Now, may people not CrossFit in the future? Well, sure, but that wouldn't make it a fad to me either.
A
lot of good things have been lost.
Yeah, sure. I'm doing some research about masculinity for a new book that I'm writing. Now,
that's interesting.
It's the book's called The Mask of Masculinity. I've been interviewing former professional athletes to female psychologists to men, women, everyone. And I'm curious to hear your opinion about how CrossFit has either shaped or reinvented or evolved masculinity, or what type of energy you see in a gym around both men and women coming together, doing these type of primal workouts to the max every day. Does that evolve someone's masculinity? Does it make them more loving and vulnerable? Does it make them harder? Does it make them able to connect with the individuals because there is community? What's your thoughts?
I'm grinning here because my focus has been the women, because there's something you know, if you kind of rephrase the whole thing around the ladies and his, you sure. know, what's going on there. I will come to that because now I get.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
Kind of went there. On the guy thing, I haven't thought about so much. I haven't seen it, but I can offer a few things. I think this is maybe the vainest population to ever walk the earth, I don't see it as a bad thing.
Everyone's shirtless. Everyone's taking photos. Shirtless.
But you know what? They look so fucking good. Maybe ought to. I mean, it's like I get it.
They look
know?
Good naked. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. So it's not a false vanity, you uh-huh. know. They look really great and they know it and they're proud of it. And so that's all cool, but there's an enormous amount of testosterone.
Yeah.
And no fights.
Hmm.
Never had a fight at a CrossFit event.
It's a lot of brotherly love. A sense.
It's crazy because I would think you can't even do that. You can't do that in the Marine Corps.
Hmm.
You know, you can't do it in a football team.
Right.
You know, the CrossFitters don't fight. They don't. There's none of that going on. We've never had a we've had people show up that weren't supposed to be at an event, kind of security event. But there's no one that
Breaking
had too
fights.
Much to drink and.
Yeah.
Police manage large venue events by getting hourly reports on the gate and the alcohol consumption. I don't know if you know that or not, but if you have a stadium, there's a guy running the thing who will every hour. It was our Andy Rios at one, and he knows how many beers have been poured.
Yes,
you know, and
sure.
when more beers come in, and they have the right to cut it off, and they've got some magic numbers where you work beyond. So many people and so many beers and so much time, and that's when the violence starts.
Yeah.
And so they trim back the beer, and CrossFit we run a pretty drunken event because none of those rules apply,
right?
And so the beer just flows all day long, and we don't have people throwing up on each other or fist fighting or stealing stuff. Every year at the games, someone loses something, and I always tell I've told the security people I want to know when someone's misplaced a wall or a person. If there's any way for me to come by them, I want to go because I want to be there and look them in the eyes. I'm going to tell them, you're going to get your wallet and purse back.
Right. Someone's going to be honest.
Yeah. And what's typically done at StubHub Center is if you want, you can start checking the trash cans. And hopefully they'll take in the cash and throw in your picture of your kids and that kind of stuff in the garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's no need to do that here. Someone is going to turn it in, and it's going to get back to you, and it'll be but sometime at the end of the day, maybe into the evening, but
sure.
you're going to get it. And I was telling a reporter that along with our agent from William Morris, Gabby Morgerman, I was telling her the story, and it wasn't a half hour later that, where's my purse? and an hour later, her assistant calls her and says, some guy has found your bag. He went through everything in it, and he found my phone number on an envelope.
Oh my gosh.
And called, and he's waiting for you, and this guy's standing there with her purse. She'd left it outside, you know? And, like, of course, that's what happens. And I think I can tell you the why of it, too. And I don't even know how this has to do with masculinity, but it's related to testosterone in men and the things men do and when they get them in large numbers, and we don't do those things.
Why?
CrossFit's really, really hard, and a lot of shitty behaviors come out of people looking for shortcuts for the easy way. And the CrossFitters, we both select for and train that all good things come out of sacrifice, commitment, hard work, not finding a purse, you know,
or shortcut.
Shortcut, stealing,
yeah.
you know, and so that brings a layer of decency on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think there's enough confidence in who you are physically that makes that. You know, I wrote an article years ago. I think it might have been published in the Santa Cruz paper or some paper, but it was published somewhere. And I was saying that the martial arts community, in terms of its physical training, they're, you know, this is the MMA was just starting. The Gracies were coming around and all. I'm watching the UFC and early days loved it. It was great. Still an amazing property. But I said these guys are training on 2 of 8 cylinders. That it's just their fitness is woefully lacking. And you triathletes, just in case you think that you know that just as bad, if not worse. Mm. And I got a crazy response from it. I got hate, death threats from the triathlon community. Death threats, phone numbers, threatening to kill, rape, murder my wife, disguised voices. Emails with the craziest stuff. And the martial arts community, what happened is many of the world's best martial artists came to me and said, "Sir, would you please help me with my training? I'd love to see what it is you have to offer." Now, what makes a skinny little twerp in a Speedo with a number on his arm think he's going to kick my ass? And where the guy at the martial arts, it's a confidence, you know? And they're just beyond that. The martial arts community has just been a joy to work with. Joy. Really like those kids, all of them. Less ego in a UFC competitor than a tennis player, you know. And
in general,
throw them all under the rug. Hey, you know, in a UFC, you don't get a paycheck unless you talk a load of shit.
Yeah,
and they get trained.
Then you get a big paycheck.
Yep, and you can get a check bigger than your talents if your mouth's big enough. Exactly. So they got to do that. I was close to BJ when they made him talk a lot of crap, and he's not a crap talker.
Yeah,
he's got none of that.
It's
in
like
him.
A reality show.
None of that. Yeah. And so that there was a lot of that. You know, that's the P.T. Barnum kind of angle that the fight world has going with it.
I mean, how does having women and men then both in the gym with women? How has this been effective with masculinity with women?
Yeah. Because
you were grinning before about saying something.
The old style of PT where, you know, there were movements we did, the snatch, muscle up, the powers that be in the fitness industry rejected those things, and even in the military community initially, things were too complicated, that you'd get hurt. It was unknown. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, without them even knowing it, what they were bristling at is that there was a neurological component. It required coordination. It required accuracy. It required agility, and it required balance. And that's not macho stuff. It's the stuff of gymnastics. But it is well within the province of a lot of what women do and the way they are. And that stuff came very naturally to them for a couple of reasons. One is they don't have the contractile potential. They're just not as strong, and so they have to be effective. The other thing is that a gal has no problem going, "I don't know how to do that. Would you show me?" And a guy comes in and goes, "Oh, I know how to do that. I do it all the time," when he's never done it at all. You know, I used to watch at Gold's. I'd watch a guy try a 400-pound deadlift and miss and then come up and say, "Yeah, I got 450 today." And like, "Oh, dude, we were all watching. You failed at four." You know, we were right here watching. So the guys will lie about what they do. And a chick would stand there and, you know, curling and go, I can't do this. It's too heavy. And like, so the women are, their egos are such that they didn't have full appreciation of their capacity. And the guys had this ego that actually had, I think some of those guys that came up and said they did 450 when it was four, didn't know they were lying. And so our sense of self is so inflated compared to theirs that it makes them easier to train, and it makes it easier for them to learn some of this stuff. You know, you can see a guy seething being taught something he doesn't know how to do, some of them.
Why is that?
Macho idiots, you know, just masculinity. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, ego. But
you feel like people are retrained through CrossFit and they evolve then?
Maybe. Or we're selecting. I don't know. Right. But I tell you what, you know, there are some super athletes in this community that started off as bodybuilders. And their first exposure was a tough thing for them, emotionally, intellectually, physically.
They couldn't do it the way they wanted to.
Yeah. And it was just really stressful. I don't want to get his name wrong. He's a good dude. And I feel bad, but there was a great example of that. There was someone that might come back to it. But so the modern PT prior to CrossFit had removed all of that coordination, accuracy, agility, and balance. So there's no cleaning, there's no snatching, there's no handstands, we're not hand walking. What are we doing? Well, it's jumping jack, sit up, run, you know, lather, rinse, repeat kind of thing. It was dumbed down, what I call dumbed down PT, where you move the neurological elements. That radically exaggerates the difference in physical capacities between men and women and dumbed down PT. One advantage we have physically over women is pretty significant, is contractile potential. You know, just with what force can the muscle shorten? Guys are a lot better than that at girls.
Yeah.
When you add a neurological component to it and you make it, so the CrossFit definition of strength is not just contractile potential, but it's productive application of force. And if the goal becomes to get above the rings is your productive application of force, or to stay balanced under an overhead squat is your productive application of force, the differences shrink significantly. Mm-hmm. And so we stacked the deck against the ladies when we went to the Monday, Wednesday, Friday cardio, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, doing lateral raises and curls and leg mm-hmm. extensions. And you bring it into the CrossFit space, and all of a sudden what we have is the 110-pound gal mentoring the kid that played football and just can't seem to get the overhead squat right. And we used to make show of that with Nicole versus the big guy in the certs. I don't know if you've seen any of that.
Sure, yeah.
And it was a 95-pound load and 50 overhead squats. And what I'd do is look for the buffest, biggest dude in the gym whose overhead was kind of like this. So he's 15 degrees forward, and you put your hands where they are, put them overhead, and then here's how you get some overhead. Leans back until the arms are straight, but I still don't have an open shoulder. And so will that beast, and I don't care if he's got a 500-pound bench press, what's going to happen at 95-pound overhead squat mm-hmm. and 50 reps? Nicole will get to 50. He will not. You just can't.
Yeah.
You can't. If that's where overhead is, you're sunk. Same for holding a handstand. And so it's all been really empowering. Add to that, and so I'm on the subject of the ladies now.
Yes.
You add to that our meat and vegetables, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, no sugar. And a lot of the insanity around body image just disappears. It's gone, long gone. We don't have any eating disorder people. Mm. We got a lot of young ladies that have come from that problem, but it's long gone now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, does jeans make my butt look fat? I mean, our girls know their butt looks good. Yeah. And your opinion doesn't matter. And they're not afraid to out-eat you at the table and brag about it.
Right.
And their confidence, it's so beautiful. And in the end, what has happened is that we now have there are enough of them, of us, that a new aesthetic has emerged. It's a new look, and it's created a new aesthetic, and it's
as strong as a new beautiful, right?
Yeah, it's a functional aesthetic. Mm-hmm. It's a functional aesthetic, and it frees women of the tyranny of an arbitrary aesthetic. And when it's arbitrary, look at what we've seen: stretched necks, elongated necks in Africa, binding feet in Asia. Heroin anorexia chic in the West. Right. And all of these things are debilitating, devastating, unhealthy, and supposed to be pretty. Mm. What they also do is reduce a woman's ability to resist you. And I find the whole thing disgusting. Mm.
Range Rover Sport leads by example. Picture this: assertive on-road performance meets commanding all-terrain capability. That's the third generation Range Rover Sport, which is the most desirable, advanced, and dynamically capable one yet. This vehicle redefines sporting luxury, offering an instinctive drive with engaging on-road dynamics and effortless composure. Now available in sleek, new Stealth Pack, Carpathian gray exterior wrapped in satin protective film with black accents and black brake calipers. Inside the Range Rover Sport, advanced cabin technology like active noise cancellation and cabin air purification offer new levels of comfort and refinement. And let's not forget about the award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment system. Enjoy a dynamic drive and total comfort with optional 22-way adjustable, heated, and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Wow, that's like a spa day while on the go. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
Disgusting. I think it I think it's a cultural adoption of a rape culture.
Mm.
And you know why do we have to impair our women for them to be beautiful?
Sure.
It bothers the hell out of me. And so I'm really, really proud of the CrossFit girls because they said they're strong, and in every sense of the word, there's just strength. It's wonderfully empowering.
Do you think they lack vulnerability?
No.
Do you think the men that train in CrossFit consistently lack vulnerability or emotional?
Maybe I don't know. But I don't.
Do you think they've trained themselves so much that they're unable to, you know, express themselves.
Really, does that emotions? Happen? I've noticed there's a bit of a dry personality around the top games competitors. Mm. Which I want to get into.
Sure.
I've been seated at the table before,
mm-hmm.
with a table full of champions, and
it's dry, huh?
You know, man, you're hearing the clinking of forks.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think would happen if it was just?
Have you noticed that? You know what I'm talking about?
I think it's just they're just very serious. They're so focused, you know, and it's their whole life is this.
I don't know. The NFL is full of focused guys, and they're going out at night committing felonies and having a blast. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's more. You're more part of a team in football, so you're able to like joke and play and like play games on each other's. But it's more of like. Obviously, you train together and you have some partner stuff, but it's more lone wolf type of energy.
I would just tell you, you know, you get put on the athlete bus on the way somewhere. And you know,
silence, crickets.
You might want to get on one of the other buses.
Exactly.
Volunteers are way more fun.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no stress on them. Well,
I get that.
They're focused, you know.
I mean, when you guys traveled in football, were you having a blast?
We were having a blast. It was almost too crazy.
Yeah, okay. That's my sense of it.
Especially at arena football, it's like Bull Durham. It's like...
Dude, a bus full of gymnasts is like it's the monkey bus.
No,
you know?
Same thing with
and they're
players.
Coming
it's
out
crazy.
The windows and trying to get on top. And
you don't even want to know the stories that happened with football players after the games in the bus. It was nuts. It was like almost like get me out of here. You know, it's a little crazy.
Yeah, good. That's what I was hoping it would be like.
What do you think it would be like if it was just all men training and all women training? Do you think there'd be a different dynamic or different energy?
In
these boxes, if it was like men only or women only.
The only exposure I have to a male-only environment was as a youngster. I had a brief stint at the Hughes Aircraft Company because my father and mother and grandparents and uncles and aunts and everyone that knew worked there, and so I had to do a little job there. And it was almost all male, and it was horrible. I mean, I couldn't stand it. I wouldn't want that. The women have been role models in our gyms.
Yeah,
role models. I was asked what you know.
I love getting coached by a woman.
Yeah,
at the gym.
Fun.
I feel like
it's
they're
fun.
Yeah.
Hey, let me share this with you.
Alignment, you know.
I've had a dozen bosses in my life. I've always really enjoyed the women that I worked for. They were fantastic bosses. And check this out. The better I did and the better I made them look, the more they liked me and the more success we all enjoyed. I've had male bosses that become increasingly uncomfortable with the quality of your work.
Hmm.
The better it gets, a lot of them, the more they don't like you.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they
feel threatened or?
Yeah, sure. They're more afraid of being outshined than being made to look good.
Yeah.
But you get a lady telling you to do a job and you do just a perfect job of it, you'll make her really happy. And there's guys that'll just like, oh, shit, uh-oh.
That's
you
funny.
Know? It
That's
is. Funny. Have you noticed it? Have you had it?
I've never had a boss.
You ever had? You ever seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How
That's
about
funny.
You?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Hope that's okay to do, hit the peanut gallery.
Yeah, of course, of course. Couple final questions for you. This has been fascinating, so thank you for opening up. Is there any question that you wish people would ask you that they never do that you could answer?
Yeah, and I can't think of what it is now, but I have thought of that before. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
Yeah, I'll come back to you and send it to you too late. But I've done that.
Yeah. What's something then you're most proud of that most people don't know about you?
Our impact on the women in our community, just what we were on, that is probably that it's a current hot button for me. I'm just fascinated by it. I'm amazed too at how much it's gone unnoticed. You know, I tried to communicate this to the people at Vogue, and then it ended up with that spread they did on Annie Thor's daughter. And I think they were more tripping on her than fully appreciating that this was liberation from a devastating, deadly culture that they were kind of at the heart of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might have been the wrong audience, the wrong magazine to make that point.
Sure.
But and the other thing is, look, I'll just tell you where the current leadership is at CrossFit, at HQ, and it relates to pride and things I'd like to be asked and wish the world knew. We have an elegant, marked by simplicity and efficacy, we have an elegant solution to the world's greatest problem, and that's chronic disease. And our team, the HQ team, has recommitted. We're doubling down to change the world's perception of what happens in the box. And I explained to staff, by the world, I mean all those people that are never going to go to a gym and die from chronic disease. I would like them to know that that we have something in our boxes. The people that are currently going to the gym, I'd like them to know. The people that are going to the box, going to the CrossFit already, CrossFitters, they need to know. You're not just getting fit. You're saving your life. And I need the people that train them to know it, and the affiliates themselves to know it, and those of us at HQ. So literally everyone in the world, I would like them to be increasingly aware of what it is that's happening in the box. And it's health. That's what's happening in the box. It's way more significant than the fitness.
Yes.
The fitness is a Trojan horse.
Mm-hmm.
Delivering wellness. And you know, sometimes you wish people knew and there's a little regret. No, it's our job now to get that message out.
Yeah.
So I get to come places like this and share that with you because sure. I think it's really, really important.
Sure.
You know, it's not good to save a life and not know you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You got to know.
Yeah.
And you know what? We'll never see the heart attacks that don't happen. We won't see the Alzheimer's that doesn't develop. You only see it when people get sick. But look, let's go with the 4 million figure. Well, 70% of the population is going to die from chronic disease. And so if our population were like any others, what that means is that we'd have an exposure of about 2.8 million people that were going to die from that growing list of cancers that we believe come from metabolic syndrome. Those things we know do the diabetes, the stroke, the heart disease, the Alzheimer's, they've gotten a pass on it. The metrics that would suggest that those things are in your future, HDL, triglyceride, glycated hemoglobin, blood pressure, mm-hmm. the elements of body comp. For every CrossFitter, whether you're coming one day a week or five, those things are moving in the right direction, which means that you are sneaking out the door from chronic disease.
Sure.
And that may easily be 2.8 million saved lives in the current community. You know, they're still going to die, but not prematurely and needlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And that awareness is something we need to share.
Yeah,
and
cool.
It's those 2.8 million lives that you have to weigh the ACL tears and the sprains and the strains. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, you know, it's a little weird to be sitting in the orthopedic surgeon's office with your badass studly injury you got from your sport and to see some fat dude who got the same thing getting out of his pickup truck.
Right.
You know, fell out of bed in the morning and you're going to be in the same hospital room. You
exactly,
know,
like, exactly.
Everybody gets hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody gets hurt. That being said, we are dramatically safer than that jumping jack, push up, sit up, run, lather, rinse, repeat PT that was going on in everywhere, especially in like military and law mm-hmm. enforcement training, you know, in schools. And we know this because we are the in-house fitness program for, you know, maybe 100 military and law enforcement training programs.
Yeah.
We've been at Colorado State Patrol for now like 15 years, 16 years.
Wow.
And we know the injury rates. And let me tell you what I tell them about their injury rates. I look at it and I go, you need to get more people hurt. You do. It's too low.
Too safe.
Too low. Yeah, make them fitter.
Yeah.
When I strive to bring the injury down to zero, I'm pulling the plug on the efficacy.
Yeah.
And you need some tolerance, you know. I said, Jimmy, you were a gymnast. Yes. Oh, did you ever get hurt? Never. I'm like, okay. You know, I know what kind of gymnast you were.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, your mom took you five times kind of gymnast. Mm-hmm. You can't stay in that sport without injury. It's true of football, too.
Yeah.
It's no uninjured.
Many, many injured seasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Play through it, too.
They play injured.
Yeah.
I used to see all the greats from the Raiders over at Gold's, and I remember seeing Todd Christensen with a bruise from ribs to knee on, like, you know, and it would be like, it would just be this horrible thing that would expand and then contract in the space of a week and getting ready for the next week.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it was just amazing.
Hmm. What is something that you're most grateful for recently in your life?
Oh, my babies, you know. I got seven kids. And
seven kids?
Yeah. Wow. And they're just amazing. And that's the easy answer now because I'm 2 weeks away from them right now, you know, and I'm going to go see them tonight or tomorrow, depending on my energy levels for the drive. Our plane's down, so I'm driving it. And the little ones are amazing. Mm. You get such insights into the world and humanity and seeing how an empty little head fills. And
crazy.
Yeah, I love that. My little one said, of course they're dangerous. That's why they call them murder cycles. It's like, I mean, that's just rich, right?
Right. Very cool.
Yeah.
This is a question I ask all my guests at the end. It's called the three truths question. So if this was the last day for you many, many years from now, and you achieved everything you wanted to achieve, and you got to write down on a piece of paper three things you know to be true about all of your experience in life that you would pass on three lessons to your friends, your family, the world, what would those three
and Lewis
be?
Will give me 20 seconds to think of them.
Exactly. Off the spot.
As the plane's going down.
Exactly.
Here's a pencil and paper.
Just kind of first thing that comes to you. It doesn't have to be perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, check the ego, be honest. And I can give it to you. This isn't going to be succinct, but it is an important lesson. And it applies to, I think, everything we do. I routinely come across someone who's extended themselves for someone and it backfired. It's either, you know, someone took advantage or wouldn't take advantage, but my God, look what I did for you. And then look what you did for it. And I'm all bent out of shape, you know? And, I've come to see that the spirit of the charity has to be that it's up to them. And you can't invest of yourself so much that you're disappointed in the give if it doesn't come out right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a truly charitable thing if it's not just that honest that I don't know what you're going to do with this. And I got my hopes, but I don't want to be, let's say, disappointed if it doesn't work out, because I don't want that to discourage me from, you know, you don't ever want the lesson to your charity to be that I'm never going to do that again for anybody.
Right, right, of course.
You know, and so you have to be willing to get burned and repeatedly to find that special person. And it's probably true in love, employees, and I'm not wrecking your cord. I think that's really important. I think it's really important because I see that a lot in people. In the training floor, it was I had to be very careful. Maybe it was my problem, but I had to be careful that things got weird when I wanted more for people than they wanted for themselves.
Mm.
And it stresses relationships. And so as a trainer, I was always kind of try to figure out what you want and what you're really willing to give. And I needed to be close to that. I'd like to be a little bit in front of you maybe, but I didn't want to be like, you're not living up to your potential.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is, believe it or not, for me somehow in my head related to that giving and being willing to see it not come out ideally and don't take the lesson from it to not give again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. How can we support you? What's the main thing you want people to take action on and try, look at?
Yeah, I'll tell you something that's dear to us right now. I've got a gripe with the soda people, and it's three-pronged. The first is the stuff's toxic, but you know what? So is meth. So is alcohol. I mean, there's a lot of toxic things in the world that don't support health. But I don't see them having had a corrupting influence on the health sciences, and soda has. Their impact at NIH and at CDC and USDA and FDA and the American College of Sports Medicine and the National Strength and Conditioning Association, it's been a national shame and a tragedy of unprecedented proportion that we've exported. Yeah. So I've got the toxicity, the corruption of the sciences, and then the third, these people have stood up some 501c3s and proxies that have lobbied and legislated against our affiliates. And that's the unforgivable one. It was always poison, and I always suspected the corruption, but we weren't bothered by it because we were doing our own thing. And here's how I deal with soda: meat and vegetables, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, and no sugar, and it's done. And I got 4 million people that don't drink the shit. But to find that I've got 22 pieces of legislation in 8 states over 9 years with my training in its crosshairs, when I find that Coca-Cola has spent a fortune to be the leading player in the chronic disease space and the training of trainers to fight this chronic disease to make sure that it's known that you never talk about food, something's got to change. And so now it's a war. So it's those three things: the toxicity, the corruption of the health sciences, and then trying to stop us from just doing our own thing. I mean, we weren't bothering anybody.
Right.
You know, my affront to Soda Pop was the new gym that opens every 2 hours and 24 minutes somewhere around the world is going to have 200 or 300 members that won't drink their shit eventually. That's all we were doing. I didn't try to make what they do illegal, and they did, and they're denying it too. But we went to the Podesta Group, and it's like my favorite lobbying firm on earth. We went to them and retained them to help us find out just where this stuff had come from. One of these licensure bills actually passed in D.C., and we were getting it repealed, which is a miracle. I mean, it was a page 2 Wall Street Journal story that CrossFit was this is only the 8th time in 40 years that a piece of occupational licensure had been repealed. And 2 of the times it's happened, it got put back. But we hired them to help us figure out where this came from.
Yeah.
And the language was big chunks of the language identical. And so there's a fingerprint on this.
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote it, who sponsored it, and why? And it's traced back to organizations that have no visible means of support outside of soda.
Wow.
And so that's a...
What can we do to support?
Well, you know, the awareness is everything.
Yeah.
Awareness is everything. Sure. And so I, you know...
Don't drink pop. That's how we can support.
You know, look... That's already handled in our. We have our consumptive reduction program. None of us are so. That's not the goal. I want to drive them out of the health sciences so that I get them out of the fitness space.
Sure.
And at first, I just want them out of the fitness space, but I realized that the fix was in it on with the docs, and we'll never find freedom if they're sold. If they've been paid off, you know, if they've been silenced.
Gotcha.
And so I'm going to have to fix medicine to fix fitness, and we definitely have a problem. Our crew, my Russ Green, found that the head of preventative nutrition research or some damn thing at the National Cancer Institute sat on Big Soda's payroll at the International Life Sciences Institute. Sounds good, right? And it's a bunch of soda heads collecting soda salaries to corrupt science. But you can imagine, he did this until his death. And can you imagine being in charge of nutrition research at the National Cancer Institute while taking a check from Coca-Cola? And what you'd expect to come of that is these organizations would be incapable of pointing to sugar as a culprit in the diet. Guess what? They've been unable to do that. So I go to the CDC's website, and what do I see? What do they want to do to avoid chronic disease? Reduce saturated fat and salt intake. Let me share something with you. You know the 2.8 million people are going to die? That wouldn't have saved a one of them. Not a one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to have a profound impact on someone's life, take their sugar away.
Absolutely.
Thank you for this.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You've been a great interviewer.
Yeah, I've got one final question for you.
Yes, sir.
And before I ask, I want to take a moment to acknowledge you for your incredible drive and for being a catalyst for saving so many people's lives and transforming health in so many people. It's unbelievable to see what you've built and what the community has built with you.
Thank you.
And how people have rallied behind this idea of eating better and moving functionally, and you've been leading the charge. So I want to acknowledge Greg for that.
I warmly appreciate that, but I have to let you know I'm a little uncomfortable, just in part humility and part just honesty. I got a lot of people that put a lot of energy into mm-hmm. what I'm doing, have done, and going back to my first partner, Lauren Glassman, to all the people that support me today, and including a whole coterie of folks that worked for free for years before there was a job. Worked for free for years before there was a job. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, it's hard to me or I anything. It's we.
Sure.
You know, we did this.
Right. Well, I appreciate you being the catalyst.
Thank you.
Inspire people to work.
I tell people I threw a lit cigarette out the window and it started a forest fire. You know?
There you go.
I'm not the god of the sun.
Sure. Final question for you.
Yes, sir.
What's your definition of greatness?
My definition of greatness? I don't know. I don't have one. It's weak, but
nothing coming to mind.
You know what's interesting? Like, greatness is one of those things. It's like endpoint. You know, and I'm a process guy, I'm not so much about achievement as I'm about process, and you stay committed to process, and that's where achievement comes from. But there are things that we set out to do, and I don't have a sense of whether it's going to take 18 months or 50 years, and I don't care either, because we're going to do the right thing for the right people for the right reason. It's always paid off sooner than I would have thought, but I never started with that in mind.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, and I use the example of a fight too. I've been in a lot of fights of all sorts, but I've never picked one because I was sure I'd win it. It was just it's time to do this, you know.
Sure.
So this person or concept needs their ass beaten.
Sure.
And it may not work, but it's needed, and I'm gonna give it a whirl, you know. Hold my beer. Watch this.
Sure.
I don't have the definition of greatness.
Greg, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
There you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this powerful, insightful interview with Greg Glassman, the founder of CrossFit. Again, if you haven't shared this out yet, make sure to click on the share button on your podcast app, if you're on your phone, or if you're on the website at lewishouse.com/412. Share that out with your friends on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Tag me at Lewis Howes and let me know what you thought of this interview. If you thought something was powerful, if you thought you wish I would have asked something different, let me know. I want to know so I can make this better for you in the future. Again, check out the full show notes to hear all the things that we talked about and cover all the things we talked about at lewishouse.com/412 to learn more. I love you guys. I appreciate you so very much. We've got some incredible guests coming up. Oh, I'm so pumped for you guys or what we're about to bring on the School of Greatness podcast. So thank you for all you do to be a part of this incredible community of greatness and for spreading the message to all your friends. I love you, and you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Home isn't just a place, it's a state of mind. Like curling up in a comfy chair while it's cold outside. With a warm drink, or maybe even a wine in hand. As you watch the world go by outside your window,
Mmm, short rib.
Good afternoon, this is your captain speaking.
Which is why at Delta, our people do our best to make you feel at home.
Refill?
Long before you get there. Delta, keep climbing.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Human nature can get a little messy, but nature is powerful enough to save us from ourselves. Seventh Generation Laundry Detergent lifts away tough stains with a 97% bio-based formula. For when you think whipping up yellow curry chicken in white pants is a great idea, totally not speaking from experience. Let nature do its thing, so you can feel confident doing yours. That's the power of Seventh Generation. Find Seventh Generation Laundry Detergent in fresh lavender and other scents at 7thgeneration.com.